Accession number 9955, reel number 4.
Mr. Calvert, reel 4. Once you'd been stopped by Timber Wood, what happened then? Where were you sent to?
I went into what was then known as Tin Town, at the rear of the barracks. They were all new. We went into these huts all together. There were about enough for, 20 to 30, I think. We'd all proper wooden structure for a bed with a polyas on, and we had a trained soldier to look after us, and we had to stand to attention and address him as a trained soldier.
Had you been issued with your kit as before?
Yes. As soon as we, the next day, our civilian clothes were taken in a bundled up, and a chap came and gave you half a crown for them. And that was the end of your kit. Because by then you'd received a full kit, whatever was necessary, and that was including, of course, the personal kit and was everything.
Was this similar to what you'd had issued before in your previous regiment?
Yes, yes.
Was it of any better quality, or yes, was it just the same?
It was good quality stuff. They were improving the quality.
Was everybody getting better quality stuff, or just
yes,
the guards?
No, I think as far as I could make out, it was better quality coming from the factories.
Now, you were in a squad. Which battalion were you in at this time?
No battalion.
Did the squad have a name?
Yes, it was, I think it was 14th Squad.
So you were just Grenadier Guards?
Altogether.
And 14 squad.
Yes.
And it was a training.
Training squad.
Can you take me through a typical day of this training that, you know.
Well, I think reveille was about 6. Breakfast was about 7. Then you had to clean up in the hut, get everything shipshape, get yourself ready for parade.
What was the breakfast like in comparison to previous breakfasts you'd had?
Better. There was plenty of bread, plenty of whether it was butter or margarine, I don't know. I don't know. There was bacon, egg, and then you had sometimes you might get something extra like sausage.
So no need for double helpings here?
No, it was. The food was good and plenty of it.
And after breakfast, you
cleaned all your kit, made sure rifle, you issued with a rifle as well, bayonet, everything, equipment, you know, the, what equipment do you call it?
Webbing.
Webbing. We got the webbing equipment. And everything had to be assembled. And
was it the leather webbing or?
No, was that woven stuff? I don't know what you call it. Well, then you went on parade and you had one instructor all the time.
When you got your kit clean, were the standards you were expected to keep it clean to, were they greater than the standards you'd been expected to clean it to in your previous?
Yes. When you went on parade, it was a Corporal Woolridge who instructed the squad I was in. You had the sergeant major and the quartermaster sergeant had probably come along and top to bottom, then round the back and side and everything. You used to lift everything up and see if it cleaned underneath the brass parts. And we gave them each a nickname, Frisky Freddy and Boar-eyed Jack, I think, because you could be sure if you had anything wrong, they found it. They were regulars, been abroad and wounded and come back. and they brought us up to the standard they wanted. So it was absolute drill, drill, clean, clean, all the time.
And you didn't mind the cleanliness?
No, no.
Did you see it as bull or, you know, unnecessary cleanliness? Or how did you see it? Did you see it as part of the...
As discipline. So that you could rely on one another. And that you, it gave you a mutual trust then from yourself to your NCO, right to your officer.
So you didn't resent it at all?
No, I didn't. I liked it. I enjoyed it.
Were there any methods of getting things clean to the levels they wanted that you were taught?
Yes. Boots. It was eel ball and...
Sorry, what?
Eel ball. It's what the cobblers used to use. They don't use it now. It's like a little spot of... I don't know whether it was a kind of a solid grease made, something solid, I don't know what it was. Eel ball it was known as. And then the bone of your toothbrush. And you used to rub it round and round, hour after hour. And then you got it to the required standard.
It you took went over with a cloth or a brush, actually.
Yes, you gave it another good rub. You spent a lot of time underneath as well, had to be done.
What, the soles?
Underneath, not the sole itself, but between the sole and the heel. Got that. I do it today with my own. Still can't stop. Then the buttons and your badges here, and your cap badge. All had to be thoroughly clean.
How did you do that?
You had to take them out every time, and you had metal polish, and or else if it was metal polish, you had a little tin of a soldier's friend. It was like a solid. You spit in it, got a toothbrush and an old one, and rubbed it on and covered it over. And when it dried, just rub it off, and it gave you a good finish. I doubt if they have that stuff today. I think they're done away with it. Yes, you were kept at it. Half a day a week was known as polishing parade. You used to sit in the hut and clean all your equipment, and you used to keep coming round and examining it to see if it was all right. And then you had the same to do with your rifle, the woodwork on your rifle. That had to be brought to that standard. And all the parts had to be clean. Then there were rifle inspection. The fingernail used to be, well, you had to move it around to get that reflection while they paint through the other end. See if there was anything in the rifling what shouldn't be there. So the bayonet was also examined. Everything had to be to a standard.
So you'd done this on a normal day, you'd do a bit of this, and then you said you went on to your parade.
You got everything ready for parade. They went on parade, I think, probably 9 or 9:30.
Would that include your hair and your personal appearance and cleanliness? Were they very strict on yourself being clean and short hair? And
When you had your rifle, you used to, if you had dirty fingernails, you used to tell them to get them clean. Because he used to show up. You'd not, I mean, if mine had all black, you'd see it, wouldn't you? If your toenails are like that, you won't need boots. You'll need slippers. All that sort of thing. Bigger size. Oh, yes, you had a lot of comments to make. Well, you took it in as fun, more or less.
What did you do on this morning parade, then?
Well, you formed up. Then you were inspected. And then you were marched back and forth, about turn, forming platoon on the left, forming platoon on the right, and slow marching, about turn, right turn, left turn, about turn. And it all had to be done just accurate. And then you had rifle drill. And then you had more drill, and there were there were other people stood watching besides your instructor. You'd have your adjutant, you'd have the regimental sergeant major wandering around, you'd have the two, what we nicknamed, somewhere in the vicinity, unless they were busy in the office. So you were under observation all the time.
The rifle drill would be the movements with the rifle.
That's right. Slope arms, shoulder arms, present arms, and the other, what was that other one was, to your left and to your right, and guarding colours, that movement. So
you found, I mean, you'd obviously got a start on most people.
Yes.
Did you maintain that lead, or did, I mean, was everybody in the same, were you all good enough for the guards, or did some fall by the wayside?
No, we all kept together. We were there about 3 months.
So no one was, no one fell out then? They were all
no,
good
they
enough
all,
for the guards?
No, they all, as far as I know, they all stuck to the training. Of course, you then had a half a day running round the field and...
The tactical stuff again?
No, physical, PT. Used to be a run-up, and then it was about that. You had to run across it and down the other end, like a log business, and then climb up swinging on trees.
And a sort of obstacle course, then?
Yes, yeah, it was. They called it physical education.
And that only happened once a week?
About once a week we got that, yeah.
What would happen after the morning parade, then, on a typical day?
Well, we were dismissed about 12 o'clock. And then you'd go back to your room and wait probably, dinner might be 12:30. Then there'd be somebody who took it in turn to go and collect the meal of what you was having, and then it was shared out on the dining table and you had your meal. And then
what sort of stuff would that be? Stewards before?
You got stew, and you got sometimes you got what we used to call a spotted dick pudding. It was a long one, a long rolled pudding, suet pudding with currants in, and they used to roll it like a sponge. You don't see that now. And
there's still good food then, this.
It was, as far as that, yes. You got potatoes and vegetables and meat.
Was it properly cooked?
Yes, it was. It was a proper cookhouse there. They had the proper army cooks, battalion cooks, you see, who'd been on it and gone on reserve and recalled. So I was quite satisfied with what I got.
After dinner then, on a typical day?
Well, you'd go out on parade again. You'd go for some another hour or two, and about 3 o'clock to half past, you'd go back into your hut, and you could happen lie down for an hour or two until tea time. 3 o'clock, just after the square was taken over by defaulters.
While you were at Caterham in this session for 14 weeks, did the training cover any of the rifle shooting or bayonet drill or any of the other things while you were there? Or was this your introductory training? You didn't go on to that.
Yes, we had training. Went into a range, a .22. Went there and quite a lot of training there.
Did they not notice? Was the training, well, firstly, was the training method the same as it had been? Was it a common army method, or did the guards have their own way of teaching you to shoot?
Well, it was more conscious of any accident. We were very strict on the firing point. And you had to count your ammunition.
Even with the .22?
More or less, if you had 2, you took 10 back, or 2 or 4, or whatever you had, you see. To make sure a live one hadn't slipped away.
And what were the targets for the .22?
Very small. The 25 yards, It'd be no bigger than the bulb, be no bigger than the end of a cigarette.
Would you be lying down?
You lie, yes.
So stay.
Yes, and you'd instructor with you all the time and just guiding you through everything and telling exactly what was necessary.
Did you not notice that you were that you were lying in the approved army manner before you were told, or did you feign that you didn't know? How did you get over things like that?
Well, I generally got down amongst the last and looked to see who were all could align, and I'd do a bit like it probably.
So you were making a conscious effort to
try and avoid being picked out. Yeah.
How did you'd already got your interest in rifle shooting? How were you getting on with it then?
Oh, very good. I could get practically a full amount of bulls at the time.
You didn't do any 303, any actual Lee Enfield practice while you were there then?
No.
What about bayonet drill?
We did that, yes, and we did the stabbing at sacks of straw.
How did they work that?
They had a big piece across wood and a sight piece, and they had these sacks hung down about level with your body here. So of course they were in and out. They used to stand one at each side and call out in, out, and then show you how to defend yourself against another attack by say a chap with a bayonet.
Were they bloodthirsty about bayonet fighting? I mean, was it seen as...
It was looked upon as being the thing then.
Was that by the guards and the West Yorkshire, or was it a guards thing?
No, I think it was the whole army, I should think, would be at it, because there'd been quite a lot of bayonet charges, hadn't they, in the beginning. So, and then they set the story going about the Gurkhas with a knife, and you had to put the fear in them with flashing the bayonet at them, and that was it. So I suppose that was the training.
Did you have to shout and things?
Yes. Bloodthirsty shouts.
How did you feel about bloodthirsty shouts? I mean, could you do it easily, or did they have to train you how to do it?
No, I shout top of your voice, that was enough.
Did you have anything specific you had to shout, or...?
Whatever you thought. There were no one else about, only men, so it didn't matter what you said, really.
During these 14 weeks at Caterham, did you get on to anything to do with trench warfare? Bombing? Trench? Digging?
No.
So it was still all...
It was still...
Open warfare orientated?
It was still the basic discipline drill.
And you hadn't moved on to any special skill training yourself?
Only got better rifle shooting, and we knew more about things in general. So, of course, gradually, we should then, next stage would be rifle shooting.
Right. Were you given lectures at all? During the day?
No.
After your session, you said at 3 o'clock it was defaulters. Program. What did you do after that?
Well, it was tea. Then we used to...
What would tea be?
It'd be jam. Some jam, plenty of bread and...
The same.
Plenty of tea, yes. And cheese. It was enough for what you wanted.
And what would you do after tea?
Well, I used to go into the recreation hut and talk amongst the soldiers, because you weren't allowed out for 6 weeks. You've kept in.
What was in the recreation hut besides talking? Did they have a games for
you? Yes, there were billiards and there were cards. Then, of course, back at canteen there were the other games. If you wanted to play them.
What do you mean?
Sergeant
by that?
Major.
What was
Crown,
that?
The Crown and Sergeant Major. It was a sheet, and there was a Crown and Anchor, and there'd be the Sergeant Major, and there'd be six on you, put your money, which you thought had come up, and they'd say, shake a like dice, and what came up, they paid out.
Would you ever join in with any of that sort of thing?
No, it was illegal. If you were caught, you were in trouble.
Was it that that put you off, or was it your church, your interest in the church? Or
I think it was interested in church. Put me off wanting to go in the canteen. There was a dry canteen, of course. You get tea and coffee and...
Did you go in there?
Cakes, yes. You could sit down for a time.
So you were free, basically, from after tea,
yeah.
You were free?
Yeah. As long as you behave yourself, you were all right. Nobody bothered you.
Did you have any other hobbies or interests?
Only talking about which chaps who'd been in the South African War. We got talking about that. Because they used to pull the leg, did you fight with bows and arrows? No, I found it very interesting. Later on, when I was allowed to go out, you had to parade in front of the sergeant of the guard. He used to look up and down, see if he was right before he allowed you through, and then you used to go down into Caterham itself, and there were houses there. People had opened the front room for you, and you could go in there and other places and sit down, and someone would play a piano and there'd be some singing, and they found, tried to keep you amused, you see. Of course, mind you, there were thousands around there at that time.
Hey, you were quite a, sound like quite a quiet lad, you know, didn't drink, quite religious. How did you get on with the rougher sort of soldier, you know, the ones who did drink and did gamble? And
took no notice of them, just were their way of life and that was it.
You got on with them all right?
Oh, yes, yes.
Was there any bullying at all, or any friction between the two sets of people?
Never. No, never.
So it was live and let live.
I've never known a fight in a barrack room. All that my service had heard of one. Never heard of, but I've heard of one which took place in a cookhouse. Because an argument, I think, cropped up over who'd made a mistake in food.
When was that? Was that this time? Or?
It was in Chelsea Barracks.
We'll come to that then, I think. So what time would you go to bed after you'd been either in the recreation room or...
Half past nine, 10 o'clock. Lights out, I think, we're at 10. We were all happy-go-lucky. We used to get in conversation one with another. I used to listen to them, one talking about this, that and the other, what his work had been, and it were very interesting. They were all very sociable people. Nothing nasty with them, as you could get, of course, in other walks of life. You could get that in a mill and factories.
How did you get on with the trained soldier? You know, the chap you had to salute and was in charge of you.
No, we didn't salute him. We had to stamp to attention and call him trained soldier. Now, he instructed us in quite a lot of things which were very useful. He'd show you how to clean your kit. Mind you, he was a regular soldier who'd been out and been badly wounded at Mons, I think, and was unfit for further duty. And he instructed us in assembling kit and a lot of things regarding the army, which naturally we found very useful.
What sort of things?
Well, he'd tell you not to go across the barrack square with a button undone. Not to go across without a headdress, cap on. Not to back answer an NCO. And all little things which made life easier, which you didn't know about.
Some of them you must have known about, though.
Yes, I knew about a few, but I kept it to myself.
So you played the innocent.
Best way.
How about the rest of the NCOs? Well, he wasn't an NCO, just trained soldier. How about the NCOs? You say that the West Yorkshires didn't have a bullying attitude at all.
No.
What about the Coldstream Guards, NCOs? Did they have a different attitude?
No, I don't think so. No, as far as I know, I never came across any of them doing any bullying. I never heard of it.
What about shouting or excessive shouting?
Oh, well, you get that. I mean, you're used to it. You never bother. The more they shout, the more you think, well, we'll do it. Well, you don't take any notice. As long as the command's given, at the right time and on the right foot, there's no trouble. It's when you get an instructor who just isn't sure and gives you an order when it should have been on the left foot, and he gives you it on the right, and you go haywire. That's where the shouting comes in, that he's confident that he's giving you the right order and that the result will be what he wants.
Would he insult you? Like, I mean, there is a stereotype of a sergeant major and a sergeant. Would they insult you, and, you know, in the talk? Or, I mean, or no, would they just shout the order?
I
mean,
no, I don't think they did any anything like that. I found them fair. As an instructor and the rank, they were very fair. And I never had any trouble with them.
What about the officers? Were they, I mean, you were in a squad, number 14. Did you have an officer?
No. No, there was the adjutant and other people supervising and seeing that the instructors carried out what the commandant wanted them to do regarding drilling.
But they didn't come in your orbit of things?
No, they didn't. The only time was what they call the passing out parade.
We'll come to that then. Now, after you'd been there a few weeks, you were caught up with, so to speak. Could you explain exactly how that came about?
Well, I was on church parade, waiting to be dismissed, and my name was called out and number. Go to the regimental, that was the commandant's office. I went there, and Sergeant Major were there. He looked at me, he said, question me like, you're so and so. Yes, I said, that's my, yes, he said, and you have another regiment, haven't you? So I had to admit, I said, yeah, in the guard room. I locked up over there until the following morning, when the sergeant in waiting came and interviewed me regarding it. I said, yes, it's true. I said, I may as well make a clean breast of it. I said, you've caught up with me. So I went into the commandant's office. There were, I think it was Sir William Ingleby of Ripley Castle. I don't know, I think he was Scots Guards, I'm not sure. And two other officers. Hat off, marching left, left, right, no, as quick as you could go. Yeah, he looked at me, your name, so I said, yes, sir. He said, you forgot one thing. Permission to speak. So I said, right, now. Got going, and I admitted it all. He said, well, do you want to go back to your old regiment? I said, no, sir, I want to stop here. Well, he says, I can't do anything less than 14 days, CB. Of course, that was it. Out I went quicker than I came in.
Did you explain to them why you'd left?
They didn't want any explanation at all. I was charged with false enlistment.
So they weren't interested in any excuses?
No, none at all. They wouldn't have any excuse. You signed a false enlistment and that's the charge, and we don't want to know anything further. The reason why or anything.
Did the question, I think from something you said about the chap who was killed at Ypres, the NCO you knew, that your battalion had gone abroad by then?
Yes, they had.
Was there any question of you having avoided active service? I know that. Or did that come into it at all? Or
no, no, because no one knew it was active service for a month after I'd gone. It wasn't known.
So there was no. They didn't raise any. They didn't try and make the charges any more serious. And
oh, no, no, no.
So were you relieved that it was all over in a sense?
Yes. Yes,
and
I was.
And you were going to be because allowed left to stay with the.
Because there'd been the police at my home on three occasions, and also a lance corporal and a private had come fully armed to escort me back. So my parents were getting a bit fed up of this constant visit some place, and because they listed me a deserter, you see. The West Yorkshire had only been put down as absent without leave because I'd left my kit.
What about, did your parents know where you were?
Yes, I wrote once and told them. I said, where I was. I said, but I'm not giving you my address. I said, I'm in the army in London. I said, more or less, I'll keep in touch with you later on.